Press Review. I'm Maris Kreisman, and I am joined today by a friend who I've admired for decades at this point, and it's so exciting to see her. Maud Newton has written for the New York Times Magazine, Harper's, the New York Times Book Review, and Oxford American. She grew up in Miami and graduated from the University of Florida with degrees in English and law. Her debut memoir is called Ancestor Trouble. Welcome, Maud.
Thank you, Maris. It's so good to see your face. It's been too long.
It has. Maud, I feel like there's no one in the world who hasn't thought, who am I, or why am I this way? Or even better, like, why are my parents this way? And you did the work to try to find out.
I did. Yeah. As you might imagine, having read the book over the years, a number of friends said, hey, you know, you should really write a memoir. And I said, you know, I actually am really intimately familiar with the dysfunction of my immediate family and spending, you know, whatever amount of time that would be sort of locked in the like, what seemed like a closet, you know, with the difficulties, we'll say, of my upbringing was not appealing to me. But as I got older and I started sort of thinking about my parents and thinking about, you know, their parents and, you know, the sort of patterns that I was noticing and, you know, becoming more curious about their personalities and why they developed in the way that they did. It was like a sort of like ball of yarn that I couldn't stop unraveling, but like many balls of yarn.
Yeah, I mean, so you have this, I've saw someone else refer to this, I'm gonna steal, referred to you as a detective, because that's what you're doing. You're just investigating yourself.
I'm very flattered anytime someone calls me a detective, because it's actually my secret other wish to be a private investigator. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, particularly in the case of my father, sort of trying to understand, you know, as I write in the book, he really was a very stern person. You know, very emotionally abusive, you know, but in a way that didn't really map onto the experiences of a lot of other people I knew who came from situations where their parents were abusive, you know, so he was kind of an enigma to me, even as an adult. And I think he's an enigma to most people. And at times I really feel a sort of compassion for him around that, you know, and so as I got older and I kind of thought about, you know, God, what is it like to move through life like that? And how do you become this person? It just kept like sending me further and further back into my family looking for clues, I guess.
Yeah. And one of the things that really struck me is that, yeah, we know about, you know, physical inheritance and even generational trauma. But what I hadn't really thought about until I read your book was about how the way we hold ourselves physically has so much to do with our experiences and our past and our genetics.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely something that I was really curious about as I started writing the book. I mean, you know, I talk a lot in there about my dad's mom. I physically resemble her a lot. She was an even smaller person than I am, but she was extremely pale, you know, had these teeny tiny wrists, and my wrists are pretty small. I'll show them to you for confirmation. You know, and, you know, teeny, teeny, tiny ankles, and just like, you know, this very small kind of anxious, seeming person. Although when I was young, I didn't really pick up on the anxiety, just sort of her frantic energy. And I really wanted to identify myself with my mom's side. Yes. You know, my mother on that side was like a freaking badass, you know, sort of hold it like it was, take no prisoners kind of a woman. And, you know, so I really wanted to be like her. And I resented the parts of myself that I saw as coming from this sort of like Mississippi Delta plantation heritage that, you know, just struck me as weak and sort of, you know, just really unappealing. You know, and as I got older and I sort of saw my posture like more and more becoming like hers, and I became aware like, oh, wow, you know, she also like clutches things way too hard and is kind of like a little clumsy in strange ways. And then like sort of seeing some of that in my father, I became really curious about that, you know, about research into posture, you know, into those kinds of things about the body that we sort of blame ourselves for sometimes, but we can also see are running through our families. And it was really interesting to delve into that scientifically and find that we don't really have a lot of answers. Yeah. But it was really interesting to sort of ponder how recognizing these similarities between my father and myself gave me this insight into him. You know, I realized like, oh, he's actually also an anxious person. You know, whether or not he views himself that right. way, I know what that feels like. So that was a kind of one of the many sort of trippy, you know, having read the book, you know, it gets a little trippy in various ways. And that is one of them, just sort of this deep understanding suddenly, intimately of like, oh, my body comes from his body and I can sort of understand more of his experience because of that.
And even in terms of, you describe so chillingly the atmosphere at home and how it would change when your father was coming home, the parakeets would stop singing. And I really thought about that clenching that you do in preparation for whatever he's gonna throw at you, and how to not do that all the time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my mom, as you know, was the one who my mom is so theatrical and can be just so funny. And so she would love to tell her friends like, and then when he's coming home, you know, the parakeets stop singing and the dogs, I can't do her accent anymore. I've lived in New York too long, but you know, she would just like say this over the top thing about how the dogs would run down the hall and hide and the cats would go under the sofas. And at the time I just sort of thought like, oh yeah, ha ha ha. But in hindsight, I realized, no, she was right. You know, we were all terrified when he came in the door. And yeah, so it definitely like the process of unlearning that has been long and it continues. The sort of like hypervigilance that comes for anyone who's gone through trauma. And, you know, I feel on the one hand, I feel despite everything I went through, sort of reluctant to paint myself as some sort of like survivor of immense trauma, because I'm also like such a recipient of immense privilege at the same time. So it's a double-edged sword. But I can see, yeah, I mean, it gives me so much empathy for people who have also been through trauma. And it's really been interesting to sort of ponder how that runs through my family. Why was my grandmother like that? You know, what was that about? I don't really have an answer, but pondering that gave me so much more compassion for her and enabled me to sort of see positive things I could carry forward through her, and or from her rather. And Yeah. So, you know, at the same time, dipping into, as you know, I go deep, deep, deep into trying to understand genetics, epigenetics, you know, to the extent that anyone can as a layperson, or to the extent that any of us really can, because science is so imperfect. And it is.
Sorry, you really brought me back to sixth grade biology, where I thought it had all been figured out and we knew how genes worked, and it was all set.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember, I mean, I'm a little older than you are, you know, by a number of years. And I remember like, oh, wow, we've decoded the genome and we're going to know everything. And that's not how it worked. Yeah. So looking at the interplay between environment and genes, you know, I think our whole culture is kind of gripped by this now. You know, thinking about intergenerational trauma, you know, even those of us who come from families who aren't like mine, you know, there's usually some kind of traumatic experience that we can sort of see affected us or affected one of our parents and maybe has a legacy in us, you know, or we maybe are like, why am I so afraid of this irrational thing? You know, and yeah, so, and then of course, when you start looking at questions like slavery, you know, legacies for people who are descendants of those who were enslaved, or descendants of Holocaust survivors, you know, descendants of the, you know, people who survived the genocide of Indigenous people in this country. I mean, there's so much exploration that, you know, needs to be done around that. And I find, you know, the idea of intergenerational trauma is very controversial among hard scientists.
Sure. And as we
write about that. But, you know, it's, I just find there's sort of a human exceptionalism sort of view of it a little puzzling, because we know that it happens in other species.
Oh, that I didn't. Which species?
Yeah. So, I mean, so definitely with mice, there's been some research that suggests that this is possible. I think some hard scientists find problems with that data as well, but it's been completely proven in earthworms, for example. You know, and for some reason, there's this sense that we're special. So, you know, these kinds of changes from environment can't be passed down to humans. So, you know, I fall on the side of probably does happen. And, you know, really, I believe it does. But, you know, I really wanted to break down that science for the reader and, you know, not sort of in a facile way, just start talking about it as though it's a reality, but just, you know, what science has shown and what isn't shown.
I have to bring my personal experience into this now, because as a type 1 diabetic, there's a lot of controversy about whether trauma not causes it, but activates the disease. And reading about epigenetics made me understand, like, so you have this gene or these genes, and then maybe something happens, and it's a combination of all these different things that lead to who I am and who we are.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because on the one hand, knowing that genes aren't fate is so, it's such an opening, you know, but on the other hand, knowing that environment can change things can sometimes almost be another way of pushing blame onto people. You know, well, what have you done to bring this on?
Yes. Yourself?
What did your family do to expose you to, you know, the thing that caused this, or whatever sort of judgmental things people might bring to it. And I find epigenetics really interesting, you know, a sort of positive opening in the sense that there are some things we can probably change a little bit, you know. I don't have type 1 diabetes, which is a much more serious thing than what I have, which is a thyroid disorder. I have Graves' disease. But you know, I can never sort of undo that, but I can sort of work with myself as best I can to, you know, learn to react to situations better so that I don't make it worse for myself. And I think, you know, I don't know about type 1 diabetes, if there's a component like that or not. But you know, it's tricky because you don't want to feel blamed for what you have. And it's not your fault that you have diabetes. But at the same time, to the extent that it maybe gives some hope around it, you know, I find it heartening.
Yeah, I feel like your book gave me a different narrative to tell myself, and I appreciate that.
Good. That's so good. I'm so glad.
And I love that